A marriage therapist was counseling a troubled couple, and he challenged them to apply the golden rule to their marriage, to look at things through their spouse's eyes and to treat them the way that they would want to be treated in the same situation. And so the husband really wanted to save his marriage. So one day, the next week, he comes home early from work. He's got a dozen roses in one hand and a gift in the other hand. He comes in the door, and when his wife sees him, she just bursts into tears, just total waterworks. And the man, he's dejected, and he's like, "What? What's wrong?" She says, "Well, first, little Johnny throws up, and I have to take him to the doctor. Then your parents call and say they're coming home for dinner, and now, to top it all off, you come home drunk." If you were to make a list of how you want other people to treat you, what would it include? If you could fantasize a world where everyone treated you the way you wanted, how would they treat you? With love and kindness? Would they always be willing to give you the benefit of the doubt, be willing to forgive? Would they show you understanding? Would they be encouraging? Would they always hear what you have to say and be willing to look at things from your perspective? Well, we look at a verse this week where Jesus invites us to create this kind of world by treating others the way we would want to be treated. It's found in Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. And in the English Standard Version, it says, "So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets." Now, of course, you recognize this verse. It's what we call the golden rule. And we find it toward the end of the Sermon on the Mount. Now, the Sermon on the Mount, as we've seen, is considered by many to be the greatest discourse on morality and ethics ever given. High point follows upon high point. In our Core 52 series, where we are looking at 52 of the most important verses in the Bible, several of them have come from these three chapters in Matthew. But this one verse, the golden rule, has been called the Everest of ethics, the highest of the high points. It is the pinnacle of the sermon. It is the most marvelous and purest statement of ethics and morality. It is the perfect summary of goodness and mercy. Even non-Christians admire its lofty ambitions and yet its humble approach. In one brilliant, succinct summary, Jesus embodies all of the moral teaching of Scripture. Now, long known as the Golden Rule, Jesus' teaching here has been widely known, but barely seen, highly sought after, but rarely found, much desired, but seldom achieved. It is truly golden. It is precious and rare. Now, here's the problem that you and I have with the golden rule. It's something that we admire only in one direction, right? We want to be able to, we love it when other people treat us the way we want, but we want to treat other people the way that we think they deserve to be treated. The golden rule is something we like to see practiced in the lives of others, but it's not something we're so ready to do ourselves. Perhaps you remember the story. 14 years ago, a crazed gunman bursts into a schoolroom where he brutally murders 14 young Amish schoolgirls and injuring many others before turning the gun on himself. And all these kinds of stories have become heartbreakingly rare in our society, but what happens next are heartbreakingly common in our society, but what happens next is astoundingly rare. The killer's parents had planned on having a small private and probably very lonely funeral for their son. And as they approached the gravesite, they were surrounded by dozens of Amish. They had come not in bitterness or anger, but they had come in this just amazing display of grace to dispense love and forgiveness. They were there to support the parents. And everyone was amazed at just how quickly and how thoroughly the Amish community forgave the killer of their children. But there was one newspaper columnist who wrote that he did not admire the Amish for what they did, because he said he couldn't forgive somebody who killed his children. And he said that we couldn't either. It's interesting, though, the power of forgiveness and the power of the golden rule. Today, Terry Roberts, the mother of the killer, has grown close to the Amish families whose lives their son so tragically tore apart that day. And she volunteers one day a week to help care for the one of the young ladies who was most severely wounded that day. The Amish that day and following embody the words of Jesus. Now, we can admit the greatness of Jesus' words, but we also have to admit how difficult they are for us to follow. And yet, all of the things that pull us apart, the things that cause our marriages to break down and communication to fail, the things that cause strife between family and friends, the things that divide churches, that kill relationships, that turn lovers into fighters and make foes out of friends, that turn neighbors into enemies, and might I add, with what's going in our country right now, the things that divide our cities, that divide black from white, that divide police from civilian, these things could be stopped in their tracks if only we put Jesus' words into practice. And so I want to invite you to take a journey with me as we walk through the golden rule, just step by step, and see how it might transform our lives. Now, the golden rule begins with a big, bold, all-encompassing word, whatever, whatever. And not in the snotty teenager, whatever sort of way. Other translations say, in everything. Or in all things, right? There's no strings, no exceptions, no limits or conditions. It is open-ended. It is, like I said, all-encompassing. It is universal. I think we would have preferred it if Jesus would have given us a bullet-pointed list. Here are the 5 times that you need to do for others as you would have them do unto you. But Jesus didn't give us 5 or 10 or even 100. He gave us whatever. Well, what about if they, whatever. Well, even if they, whatever. The troubling thing about the golden rule is that you cannot find the instance where it doesn't apply, right? The exception that proves the rule. The universality of the golden rule is that it means that it applies every time, all the time, everywhere, anywhere. It's always the right thing to do. It is always the best choice. This verse is built on everything that comes before it. We find it very near the end of the Sermon on the Mount. And like any preacher, he wants to have a strong conclusion to his message. And he wants to sum up everything he said so far. So Jesus, he looks back over everything he has said to this point, and he offers this one overarching conclusive statement. And everything that Jesus has said about being angry with your brother, about lust and being faithful to your spouse, keeping our promises, loving our enemies, giving, money, possessions, worry, all of these things can be summed up in this one little statement. And the genius of it is that to understand godly morality, to put Christian ethics into practice in your life, it doesn't require an exhaustive theological knowledge, right? It just asks that you treat others the way you want to be treated. If you do that, you've got 99% of Christian ethics covered. Now, the Pharisees, the religious leaders whom Jesus has kind of been staring down throughout this whole sermon, they gave great effort to having a perfect understanding of the law. And they tried to practice it with a wearisome exactness. But with all of their precise theology and intricate interpretation, the Pharisees often completely missed the point when it came to their attitude and their treatment of other people. And here's the thing. Knowing what God's word says means nothing if it doesn't change how you treat others, if it doesn't change how you love people. And living a Christian life doesn't require reading volumes of books. It doesn't require a Bible college degree or years and years of experience. It simply takes a willingness to treat others the way you want to be treated. Now, you might not know all the correct theology for why you do what you do. You might not be able to explain the doctrine behind it. You might not be able to quote book, chapter, and verse where it says, "You shall do this." But because of what Jesus says here, there's always one way you can know the right thing to do. What would we want them to do if we were in their shoes? Jesus then follows up this whatever with this. Whatever you wish that others would do to you. Now, normally, we operate on the rule of treating others based upon how they treat us. If you forgive me, I'll forgive you. If you're understanding with me, I'll be understanding with you. If you are kind to me, I will be kind to you. However, if you get angry with me, then I'm going to be upset with you. If you do me wrong, then you better watch out. But Jesus flips this whole thing around. Because he doesn't say, you know, show others the same respect that they show you. He didn't say treat others kindly until they do you wrong. Jesus says the standard for how we treat others is not how they treat us or how we expect them to treat us, but it's how we wish they would treat us, how we want them to treat us. That's how we should treat them. But usually we go through life dispensing our love according to what we think others deserve. The problem with the measurements of our dispensing of love is that our measurements are always off. You ever like baked a cake or baked some cookies and you messed up the recipe, you read the ingredients wrong, or you used the wrong measuring utensil, you know? You use twice as much salt or half as much sugar as you should have? Well, that's our problem in treating others according to what we think they deserve, is our measurements are off. And marriage provides, I think, the best illustration of this. A lot of couples go into marriage with this very idealistic notion of, we're going to have a 50-50 marriage. We're going to share everything. We're going to split everything. And we're going to share it right down the middle. It's a myth. It doesn't work that way. And the reason is because the husband's definition of his 50% is different from the wife's definition of her 50%. All right, so you get 2 years into a marriage, right? If it's a really bad marriage, maybe it's only 2 months. If it's a really good marriage, maybe 5 years. But you get to a certain point where, okay, the husband, he's thinking, you know what? I'm carrying 60% of the load. And she's only doing 40%. Well, I'll show her. I'll pull back. I'll withhold. I'll withdraw some. And so she'll have to pick up her end of the deal. Meanwhile, at the same time, she's over here thinking, I'm carrying 60% of the burden and he's only doing 40%. Well, I'll show him. I'll pull back. All right, and so 50-50 all of a sudden becomes 40-40 and then 30-30, 20-20 in divorce court. The reality is that marriage should be a 100-100 deal. Now, I realize that in real life, neither partner lives up to that ideal that ideal 100% all the time, right? But even if it's only 60-60, right, there's enough there to keep the boat afloat. And frankly, there are times in marriage where you might be carrying 70, 80, 90% of the load. Because maybe your spouse is going through a hard time. Maybe they're sick. Maybe they're disabled. Maybe they're just, you know, dealing with mental health issues or struggling with an addiction or some other issue. And you're carrying way more than half the load. But you keep the relationship alive and give it time to recover and to heal and to grow. That's the genius of the golden rule. Now, Jesus then says, do also for them, right? Whatever you wish that others do to you, do also for them. There's a guy who's written, he's a professor of philosophy and ethics. I think his last name is Hansler, something like that. Anyway, I ran across him when I was studying for this sermon, and he's written these books and articles and stuff all on the golden rule. And what's interesting is he doesn't approach it from a Christian perspective, but he's a big believer in the golden rule. And one of the things he says about it is that the golden rule is endorsed by nearly every religion and every culture. He writes, the idea is global. It's common to all major world religions. Confucius, Hillel, Jesus, and many others use it to sum up how to live. But as you look through what these other religions, these other religious leaders and other philosophers have to say, you'll notice that there's a huge difference between what they say and what Jesus says. Let's see if you can spot it. Confucius says, do not do to others what you would not wish done to yourself. The Stoics, Stoic Greek philosophy, what you do not want to be done to you, do not do to anyone else. Rabbi Hillel of the Jewish tradition, do not do to anyone what you yourself would hate. The Greek philosopher Epictetus said, what you avoid suffering yourself, do not afflict on others. Muhammad, hurt no one so that no one may hurt you. Hinduism, do not do to others what would cause pain if done to you. Buddhism, treat not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful. Baha'i, lay not on any soul a load that you would not wish to be laid upon you. Did you see it? What's the difference between what Jesus says and what all those other philosophies and religions say? That's right, they're all in the negative sense. Don't do to others so that they don't do to you. You know, don't do to others what you don't want them to do to you. Now, those things are all good in their own right, but these negative expressions, they come nowhere close to the golden rule. In the Core 52 book, Mark Moore calls them the silver rule. And they're not even in the same league with Jesus. They basically set a minimum standard for the functioning of society, all right? Don't do to others that what you don't want them to do to you. And the primary motivation of the silver rule is fear, right? Don't do this to others because you don't want them to do it to you. But Jesus' golden rule is motivated by something completely different, an affirmative desire to do for others what you want them, what you would wish them to do to you. The silver rule, do not do to others what you would not wish done to yourself. Here's the thing about that. You could fulfill that by doing absolutely nothing. When I am laying on the couch, vegging out, watching a NASCAR race, I am fulfilling the silver rule. I'm hurting no one. I'm inflicting nothing on anyone, right? I'm fulfilling the silver rule, but I'm still falling very short of the golden rule. You see, the golden rule is a call to action. It's a call to do something. Jesus wants us to take the initiative. We're to be the ones to take the first step. Don't wait for them to do it first. Don't wait for them to take the first step. Don't just respond and react, but take the initiative. Jesus' command to do also for them takes on a completely different nature and spirit. There is a huge gap between keeping yourself from harming others and taking the initiative in doing good for them. You can avoid doing bad things to others, but still ignore them, avoid them, neglect them. But Jesus calls for an active love and a positive presence in people's lives. I mean, how often do we want the other person to make the first move? How often do we wait? I'll do the right thing when they do the right thing. I'll say something when they make the first move. Jesus doesn't want us to wait for the other person to make the first move. He says, no, you make the first move. You take the first step. You break the ice. You start the healing process. The golden rule calls for positive action on our part. And this is what sets Jesus apart from everyone else. William Bennett, in the Book of Virtues, shares this unattributed piece of poetry, but it expresses this perfectly. It says, "It isn't the thing you do, dear, it's the thing you leave undone that gives you a bit of heartache at the setting of the sun. The tender word forgotten, the letter you did not write, the flowers you did not send, dear, are your haunting ghosts at night. The stone you might have lifted out of a brother's way, the bit of heartsome counsel you were hurried too much to say. The loving touch of the hand, dear, the gentle winning tone, which you had no time nor thought for, with troubles enough of your own." I'd like to leave you with an old story. It's called the parable of the spoons, or the parable of the long spoons. A holy man asked the Lord to show him heaven and hell. And so the Lord led him to two doors, and he opened the first of the two doors, and inside was the large round table, and in the middle of the table was this pot of stew. It looked and smelled delicious. It made the man's mouth water. And sitting around the table were these thin, emaciated, sickly-looking people that looked like they hadn't eaten in weeks. And yet they had strapped to their arms these long-handled spoons. The handles were long enough that they could reach the pot of stew in the middle of the table and fill the spoon. But the handles were too long that they could not put the spoon in their own mouth. And the man was greatly troubled, and he turned to the Lord, and the Lord said, "You have seen hell." Then the Lord leads him to the next door, and he opens it. And the scene was strikingly similar to the first one. There's the same large round table, the same pot of stew in the middle, and there's people sitting all around, except these people are plump, and their face is full of color, and their eyes are full of life, and they have the same long-handled spoon strapped to their arms, and they're laughing and talking and having a good time. And the man says to the Lord, I don't understand. "It's simple," said the Lord. "It requires but one skill. You see, they have learned to feed each other while the greedy think only of themselves." That's the power of the golden rule. And so I want to give you a bit of an assignment here. I want you to write down a name of a person in your life. And I want you to commit to making the first move. It might be somebody that that there needs to be some healing or reconciliation in your relationship, and you've been waiting for them to call you, or you've been waiting for them to apologize, or whatever the case may be, and maybe it's time for you to make the first move. Or maybe it's simply just somebody who needs a little bit of help, a little bit of compassion, somebody just to step in and be a positive presence in their life. And you can be that person. So write that name down and take a couple, 3 days to think about it, to pray about it, and ask God to show you something specific that you can do for them. And put the golden rule into practice. I think by doing this specifically and deliberately, it might open our mind to other opportunities to do these things. Thank you, and God bless.